10 years ago this week, Iowa became the third state to legalize same-sex marriage. This hour, remembering that historic Varnum decision. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It was a unanimous decision of the Iowa Supreme Court on April 3rd, 2009. The court held that the state's limitation of marriage to opposite-sex couples violated the Equal Protection Clause of the Iowa Constitution, and that had the effect of legally recognizing same-sex marriage here in Iowa. We want to talk about it this hour. We want to include you because I know for some people listening, it is a moment. 2009, April, that moment I just described, when many people remember where they were when they heard the news and what it meant to them. We want to get your input this hour. How did Iowa's decision to allow same-sex marriage impact your life? And of course, this is not just limited to gay and lesbian listeners, but others who want to mark this anniversary with a thought or experience. Also, tell us, how has your attitude toward same-sex marriage changed in the past 10 years? We'll be remembering how a U.S. president, former U.S. president's attitude, at least in public, evolved on this issue a little bit later in the program. Joining us to start off our program, Camilla Taylor, Director of Constitutional Litigation, the Midwest Regional Office of Lambda Legal. She was counsel for Varnum v. Breen. Camilla Taylor, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sharon Malero is also with us in our Des Moines studio, founder of One Iowa. We'll get into that, how that ties in with the Varnum decision also later in the program. She's a member of the litigation division now at Davis Brown Law Firm, also an expert witness for the plaintiffs in the Varnum decision. Sharon, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Let's go back in time, if we could have you take us back in time. Camilla, can I start with you? Take us back to 2009, prior to that announcement of the Varnum decision on April 3rd. It's really interesting. In just 10 years, we have to use some imagination to remember what the sort of national mood was on this issue and what the legal situation was. Walk us quickly up to that day.
Well, we have to remember that at the time that the Varnum decision came down, there were only two states in the country that allowed same-sex couples to marry, and they were Massachusetts and Connecticut. You had to go to New England to get married if you were a same-sex couple, and then you wouldn't be respected when you came home to your home state. So when the Iowa Supreme Court ruled, and it ruled unanimously, the first time a court had done so in granting couples the freedom to marry, it was just explosive around the country. LGBT people, not just in Iowa, but all around the country, celebrated with Iowa. And we're thrilled to think that a court in the heartland unanimously recognized the equal dignity of these families, not just the couples themselves, but their children. And that, I think, changed the world. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that that had a big role in advancing the fight for the freedom to marry from coast to coast.
Mm-hmm. You think Iowa had a big role, Camilla, in, I mean, I don't know, it would be a challenge to find any sort of societal attitudes that have changed as quickly as they have about same-sex marriage. Do you think Iowa was part of that that drastic and quick change?
I absolutely do. I mean, I think that there were millions of micro-acts of bravery of people coming out and demanding respect for themselves and for their families, and having a government say that you enjoy equal rights, you have the freedom to marry just like any other family, and you should have that respect, was very important in helping to prompt those acts of bravery. But once people have come out and once they've demanded that respect for themselves, I don't think the world can ever change back.
Sharon Malero, you take us back to that from your perspective, the historic Varnum decision in April of 2009.
Well, I think Camilla summed a little bit of it up. I always knew that as we were advocating for Iowa to be a state for Lambda Legal to consider, that if we could show people that the heartland understands the need for same-sex couples to have the same rights, privileges, and immunities that are afforded under the law, that that other parts of the country would say, wow, if the heartland gets it, I guess maybe it's something that we need to look at.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, aside from your involvement in Varnum, what did this mean for you personally?
Personally, it meant that I was able to marry my partner of 20 years and provide for her in the same way that other same-sex couples do. It also was a vindication for me that something that I knew for so long should happen in Iowa was able to happen. I think I was probably one of the few people on the team that had 100% faith that the Iowa Supreme Court would decide the way they did, and I was probably the only one around the table that was not surprised that it was a unanimous decision.
Right, and working in the news at that time, sitting in this very chair for a talk show on that very day, I can tell you it caught at least our news staff by surprise. We put together a show for it, but it was not expected. Can you tell us, Camilla Taylor, tell us the story behind the Varnum case? This involved six same-sex couples who first they went to the office of the Polk County Recorder in Des Moines. They were denied marriage, right?
Yes, they were. And at Lambda Legal, we had received letters and calls from couples in every state in the country asking us to bring suit on their behalf. And at that time, the federal courts were pretty hostile to the claims of same-sex couples. And so we were looking for opportunities in state courts to file suit to try to advance the freedom to marry and to move the movement forward. And Sharon was one of the lawyers in Iowa that I had been working with as a relatively new lawyer for Lambda Legal on a number of different cases involving family law and other matters. And Sharon was an advocate for considering Iowa as a place where we could win a victory. And there were other couples as well in Iowa who were big advocates of that. And we were fortunate to be able to team up with probably the closest I've ever come in my career to meeting Atticus Finch, a lawyer named Dennis Johnson, who's the former Solicitor General of Iowa, who took a chance on us and believed in us also. And we filed suit on behalf of all of these couples. And at that time, only Massachusetts allowed same-sex couples the right to marry. And many thought we were crazy. Many told us so. But the lawyers on the case and the couples themselves always believed in their fellow Iowans. And they had faith that they would be treated fairly by the courts and by their neighbors. And by and large, they were. And we were thrilled to get a victory from an Iowa trial court. Dennis Johnson always told us that Iowa courts are second to none, and he was right. And then the county appealed the case up to the Iowa Supreme Court, where we received the unanimous ruling. And we pitched the whole case to Chief Justice Marcia Ternus. We knew she was a relatively conservative justice. She was not an ideologue, but we knew she also cared about children. And the children of same-sex couples deserved to enjoy the same respect for their families as any other kids. And that's the way we explained the case. And we were helped along by incredibly brave kids of one of the plaintiff couples who took on the role of spokesperson for children of same-sex parents everywhere. And we were heard. And so it was a wonderful vindication for all of them.
I want to read a few lines from that court decision, the Iowa Supreme Court decision we're talking about today from 2009. This is a unanimous opinion authored by Justice Mark Cady, the court affirming Polk County District Court decision. Our responsibility is to protect constitutional rights of individuals from legislative enactments that have denied those rights, even when the rights have not yet been broadly accepted. We're at one time unimagined or challenge a deeply ingrained practice or law viewed to be impervious to the passage of time. Sharon, this is really some important things here. This had not been anything but broadly accepted, and the court was acknowledging that.
Yes. I mean, I think that was the whole theme of the case, was that these are issues that need to be looked at that nobody has looked at before, and these are issues that are important to people on a daily basis.
Camilla, explain the court's reasoning that led to a unanimous decision. Go right to the Equal Protection Clause of the Iowa Constitution. Walk us through that and tell us how it really had to be a unanimous decision through legal eyes.
Well, the Iowa courts long have interpreted their constitution as granting broader protections than the federal constitution. It's more protective. And so Iowa courts have stood up for the rights of marginalized people on a number of different occasions, often long before the same rulings have been reached by federal courts. It's a long and proud tradition of recognizing that when Iowa courts see an unfairness, they will correct it, even if they are standing alone in doing so. So what the Iowa Supreme Court did in Varnum was to rule that any time a legislature singles out gay people for some special disadvantage, for some special punitive measure, that that is presumptively unconstitutional. So classifications, to put it in more legalese, classifications based on a person's sexual orientation warrant heightened scrutiny. And that means that the government has the burden of explaining some sort of good justification for treating people unequally in that way, and the government couldn't do it here because there was no justification for depriving same-sex couples of the ability to marry and for causing their children to be told by their government that there was something wrong with their families.
Join our conversation as we discuss the 10th anniversary of the Varnum versus Breen decision, the Iowa Supreme Court that essentially made legalized marriage in Iowa, the third state in the country to do that back in 2009. Give us your thoughts, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you remember that day. It stands out for you. We'd like to hear your thoughts. Perhaps it shaped your life. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We want to get to some personal stories, but to kind of finish this narrative we have going back in time, it was in 2010 that then Iowa voters defeated the retention of the three judges responsible for that decision. According to Iowa's judicial law, we have periodic retention votes for judges on our Supreme Court, and it happened to be that three judges were up for retention in 2010. They all three lost their positions, Chief Justice Marcia Ternus, Justice David Baker, and Justice Michael Streit. Camilla Taylor, this marked the first time in the Iowa Supreme Court's history that justices had not been retained in our system. That had been going on since 1962. Looking back, why did these three judges lose that retention vote?
Well, from a very practical perspective, they were targeted by a lot of out-of-state money, by a movement that was trying to oppose the freedom to marry for same-sex couples and wanted to make an example out of judges who had integrity and who took a brave stand for what is right. And when we think of all the bravery that went on in this case, from Denny Johnson, who took a risk on us and agreed to litigate the case with us, to all of the plaintiffs themselves who knew that they would be standing up for themselves and for the rest of the community in a very public way. The justices on the Iowa Supreme Court, I'm sure, were aware that there could be consequences to ruling the right way here, the fair way for same-sex couples in Iowa and their kids. But they did the right thing because they had integrity, and I think we all grieved when we saw the results of that election.
Mm. By November of 2012, another judge was up for the retention in that election. This time, a different outcome, though. One judge up for retention, one judge retained. Justice David Wiggins, a retention on the ballot by 54-46% margin. Sharon, I guess we see there, the attitude in Iowa changing just in those 2 years.
I agree. I think it was an attitude change, but I also think that the loss of the three justices was a wake-up call for the Iowa Bar Association. I don't think that they felt that that was going to happen. I think that they'd never seen a fight like that before. Like Camilla said, I think several million dollars poured into the state from out-of-state interests, and the Iowa Bar, as well as the judiciary, didn't have the means the first time to kind of counter that kind of attack. I think the second time when Justice Wiggins came around, we were better prepared as the Bar Association and as the judiciary to meet that challenge. So I think that also assisted in turning around that particular vote.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about the Varnum anniversary, the decision that made same-sex marriage lawful in the state of Iowa. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Sharon Malero with us, along with Camilla Taylor of Lambda Legal. They were both involved in that case. We'd like to devote a lot of the rest of the show to personal narratives. Please share yours, 1-866-780-9100. Mary Frances Evans is with us as well. She got married and also divorced under the Varnum decision, so to speak, to her same-sex spouse. Mary Frances Evans, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I love how you giggled when you said divorce.
I don't.
It's okay.
I have no explanation for that. But, I mean, why not? If you have the right to marry, you should have the right to the divorce, of course. But let's go back to that day, Mary Frances, for you. April 3rd, 2009. Does it stand out for you?
You know, I'm sitting here in the studio across the table from Sharon Malero in Des Moines, and I can't stop grinning, thinking back to that day. We were fortunate in that we were able to be involved in some of the things leading up to it. Our family was asked to speak at events leading up to the decision. I got to tell you, we had two little bitty girls, and we weren't sure how this was going to go. We did not have the confidence that the legal people did. But a month or so out, as we were meeting more and more people, and as the decision approached, there was this almost invisible vibration of optimism that you could kind of feel, but nobody dared to go all the way to hope on it. And so when the decision was announced, I have to tell you, it was disbelief. It was like everything that you hoped would happen, but really didn't want to put all your faith in it would happen, it happened. And I was at a friend's house. There was a gathering, and I happened to be on the phone with my, I'll just call him my brother because he is my brother, but he was working at the Supreme Court building at the time, and he knew the website kept crashing at the Supreme Court that morning, and he was calling me to check on the website, and he called and he said, Mary, I said, yeah. I said, do you know something? And he said, yeah. I said, is it good news? And he was not exactly sure about same-sex marriage at the time. And he said, well, it's good news for you, maybe. And we have, well, he has changed his tune since then. But I remember, and we have video of it, I accidentally hung up my flip phone on him at the time and looked out at the group and just said, you guys, we're getting married. And still palpable, still makes me smile. What a wonderful, wonderful day that was.
What difference did that make for you? For your spouse, for your two adopted kids, I understand. What difference did that in everyday life make?
Well, we had been together for quite some time, almost 20 years. And in those years, we had to do every single thing. We had to add an extra filter, whether that was, I remember I was getting a surgery and we had to have extra paperwork. And the hospital at the time did not want to let my partner be the person that they spoke to in the recovery room. They would only speak to my parents, and I was 30 plus years old at the time. When we traveled, we had an envelope of documents that had advance directives and power of attorney and all of this stuff to protect our relationship, to protect each other. When we did anything like buy a house or certainly adopt our children, we paid twice as much to adopt our children because we were two separate people. So we had to pay two separate fees to get home studies and that sort of thing done. Everything we did and everyone we worked with, whether it was a school or a business or where we chose to take our business, we had to kind of vet them first to make sure they would accept us. And when the decision happened, it took all of that away and provided the same legal framework for our relationship, for our covenant at the time, that every other couple did. And I tell people that, I mean, divorce is yucky.
Right.
But
and I didn't mean anything.
No.
It's just an odd juxtaposition
to
say that.
I'm talking to you in person. That decision was more important on the day the judge signed our divorce than on the day the judge signed our marriage certificate.
How so? Mm-hmm.
Well, it provided the same exact legal framework for us to redefine our family. me, my spouse, and our two daughters, it provided the same legal framework for us to divide our time and our assets and everything else as any other family without having to be run through the filter of subjectivity or religion. It was just simple taking it apart, just like anyone else who goes in for a divorce. And when it comes down to it, it's just legal stuff and money stuff on the legal end of things. And I'm happy to say, you know, we still consider ourselves a family, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Daughters are teens or tweens now. And yeah. We had fantastic lawyers helping us through the divorce process. We were one of the first ones to do that, especially with adopted kids. But the law was there to, right. like I said, provide that framework so that everyone working on behalf of our family could help us redefine it just according to the law, period.
Mary Frances Evans, we have about a minute left, and we're going to say goodbye to you at the half here when we do take a break. But I wanted to hear in closing what your observations are about the acceptance of same-sex marriage in overall in society, according to your experience. Do you know, for instance, people, and it may be a family member who were, yeah, have evolved. I guess that word it was used a lot during the time.
Well, I'm number 6 of 9. So, yeah, I have a few family examples. But, I mean, there were people close to me at the time that we got married. We got married on May 1st of 2009, just the first minute that we could. You know, there were people who were hesitant about the whole thing and who did not come. But when it came to the divorce part, suddenly they thought, well, that's fair is fair. And, you know, I'm glad the law is there for you now. I think the group One Iowa, people like Camilla, people like Sharon, did a masterful job of making people who happened to be gay palatable to people who had never met them before. They did years of work leading up to it so that by the time gay marriage is an everyday thing in Iowa, it's really not that big of a deal.
Okay. Mary Frances Evans, thank you very much. Married under the Varnum decision, one of the first couples to marry under the Varnum decision in 2009. We thank you for coming into the studio, Mary.
Hey, thanks for having me.
When we come back, we'll continue to mark the Varnum 10th anniversary decision with Camilla Taylor and Sharon Malero, founder of One Iowa. We'd like to hear from you. Has your attitude toward same-sex marriage changed over the years? How did this decision to allow same-sex marriage impact your life? 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back with Camilla and Sharon and more personal stories as we mark this 10th anniversary of the Varnum decision. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 10 years ago this week, Iowa became the third state to legalize same-sex marriage. This hour, we're remembering the historic Varnum decision, as it is known, of the Iowa Supreme Court. It delivered a unanimous ruling, all 7 justices, that won the right for same-sex couples to marry here in Iowa. Today, we're returning to that historic ruling, recounting those events to hear how it was viewed then and how it's seen now 10 years later. With us, Camilla Taylor of Lambda Legal. She was involved in the case as counsel for Varnum v. Breen. Also, Sharon Malero in our studio, founder of One Iowa, expert witness for the plaintiffs in Varnum. You can join our conversation. How does that day stand out for you? Did it shape, impact your life? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. I want to talk a little bit about what the state politics were like at that time. In a joint press conference on April 3rd, the then Iowa House Speaker, both chambers under Democratic control at that point, the House Speaker Pat Murphy and the Senate Majority Leader Mike Ronstadt welcomed the court's decision, saying, quote, "When all is said and done, we believe the only lasting thing about today's events will be why it took us so long. It is a tough question to answer because treating everyone fairly is really a matter of Iowa common sense and Iowa common decency. Iowa has always been a leader in the area of civil rights." Well, also in the legislature at that time, Senator Matt McCoy, now former Senator, State Senator Matt McCoy, who is openly gay, was at that time as well. He welcomed the decision. Matt McCoy joins us now. Welcome to you, Matt.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. So take us back to that day for you. Give us the view from your lens in 2009.
Well, it was a very exciting time, obviously. The decision came down while we were in the legislative session. So it was a little bit earlier than we thought. We thought they'd wait until after session had adjourned for the year, and sometime later in May, and so that really focused the attention at that point on the Iowa legislature, and we had groups that began petitioning the legislature for a constitutional amendment immediately.
Mm-hmm. So, Chief, the Republican leaders in the Iowa State House expressing disappointment, calling for this constitutional amendment that they said would protect traditional marriage. Then Iowa Governor Chet Culver, Democrat, stating that he was reluctant to support amending the Iowa Constitution to add a provision, in his words, that our Supreme Court said is unlawful and discriminatory. So you were serving as an openly gay legislator during that time. How did that inform your position? How did you work with fellow legislators? Did you explain from a personal perspective?
I did. I had many private conversations with my colleagues and talked to them about what was at stake here and why this decision was so important to the LGBTQ community and ultimately why it was the right decision. And I certainly talked to them from a perspective of being openly gay and also having had the experience to really get to know the community and know what the issues the community was facing as it related to not having the ability to enter marriage, which was, you know, really a very sacred way of expressing your love to one another. Why it was so important, because I heard from Iowans and I heard from people across the country at that time just how they had been discriminated against based on the fact that they were not married, and how they were treated at hospitals, how they were treated at lending institutions, housing, employment. Those were all issues that surrounded marriage equality, and so it was a huge issue. And I did all I could to help legislators understand why that was important.
Some of the feedback you got was unpleasant. In fact, so many people were unhappy with the way that, I guess, you had become the legislative voice against putting same-sex marriage to a public vote in sort of a referendum. They weighed in to you. You kept all of those emails against marriage equality and turned them into a book, the title of which, and we've talked about it on this show, McCoy, You're Going Straight to Hell. That's the title of your book, right?
That's right.
Go ahead.
And literally, I received hundreds and hundreds of emails that were personally written from people expressing their opinions both for and against marriage equality, and I realized that they were important artifacts in this civil rights issue of the day, and put them into a book and shared my responses in that book, and so that they would live on in history and people could kind of see what the prevailing thoughts were at the time. Iowa was the third state in the nation, I believe, marriage equality was legalized, and so there was a lot of attention and a lot of focus put on Iowa.
Okay, Matt McCoy, thank you very much. We have a lot of other input this hour. We want to thank you, former State Senator Matt McCoy, now a Polk County Supervisor. We appreciate it, Matt.
Thank you.
River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the Varnum decision 10 years ago this week. David is in Dubuque. We want to get to a number of other callers and inputs here before our hour slips away from us. David in Dubuque, welcome.
Good morning.
Yeah, good afternoon. Also in Dubuque, I think we're just in the into the afternoon. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, my partner of 35 years, faithful years, we were able to be married because of this change in Iowa on December 26th in 2015 in the civil ceremony by a magistrate here in Dubuque. And I think it was like coming out of the shadows.
Yeah. I hear a bit of emotion in your voice, David.
And it was for love. And I think we're better citizens.
Right.
For having done this. He is 79 and I am 80.
Wow.
And it's been a long time. I'm sorry.
No reason at all to be. David, there are a lot of people emotional on this anniversary. No excuses necessary. Tell us, if you can, if you'd rather not, it's okay. Tell us, you in your many years on this earth have seen quite a swing here, too. And what does it mean when a society says your marriage is as good as an opposite sex marriage?
It means that we are all human beings together on this planet, on this nation, in this state of Iowa. And I think many people were happy to see this happen. Many, we call it straight people, straight men and women, were happy to see this happen. And I sometime hope to have a little, you know, a religious marriage ceremony also before we go on. But in the meantime, we're in our own home here in Peosta.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that someone said Iowa is a state where civil rights are honored, and I think that this step by the Supreme Court, even though they were punished later by some people from out of state, they were punished by being thrust out of office.
Yeah.
For that I regret, you know, but I always have thanked them for their courage.
David, thank you for your story, calling us up from Dubuque about the Varnum decision. We appreciate it, David.
Thank you.
Let's talk with also Michael Moraine. Michael Moraine is in our studio in Des Moines. He's now communications manager with the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, we don't have much time, but you've got a wonderful story to tell. I understand, about to celebrate your 10th anniversary marriage to your husband, Heath Smith. Your marriage has an interesting tie-in with the Varnum decision. At the time, I understand you lived downtown in Des Moines and were working as a reporter for the Des Moines Register. Tell us quickly the story.
That's right. We just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and we benefited from so many years and decades of work from the people we've heard from earlier in this hour. But on the morning of the decision came down, word got around town that they were going to hand down the decision. And so I biked up the hill to the Supreme Court and just to see the scene. And I spotted a colleague of mine at the Des Moines Register, and he spotted me, and he asked if I would stick around and collect some reaction quotes from the crowd that had assembled outside the Supreme Court building, because he needed to go in and get a copy of the actual ruling. So I said, sure, that'd be fine. I had not been assigned to cover it. I wasn't planning on doing it. But as soon as somebody came out the front doors and announced the decision, there were lots of emotions on that plaza. And the first person I talked with was an activist who had fought hard against same-sex marriage. And so I set up an interview, and I started asking questions, and I was rifling through my backpack. And since I had not planned on working, I didn't have a notebook, but the only piece of scrap paper I had in my bag was the invoice to our wedding cake. So I started taking notes on the back of that, and I had my sort of professional, you know. I was trying to be very neutral. But
right.
It,
little did your interview partner know what you were taking notes on.
Yep.
What a wonderful story. Michael, reflections on this anniversary and how far attitudes have come in Iowa and the country.
Yeah, that's right. It's really remarkable to think that already 10 years has passed and the sky has not fallen. And here we go into the future, wherever it rolls.
All right. Stay with us, Michael Moraine, until the end of the show. We want to get in some other voices. One here, you know, evolution, to evolve on this. We heard that phrase again and again some years ago. I want to play perhaps the most famous evolution here. This is President Obama going back to 2012. Remember, remind us, Camilla, President Obama was, what, not, when he was elected, he was not 100% on board, was he?
He had not come out with a public statement embracing the freedom to marry for same-sex couples. He was not there yet.
Okay, so this is going back to 2012. I'm trying to find my... here we are. He's on ABC News in 2012 saying that he will support same-sex marriage. Earlier in the interview, he had said he hesitated on gay marriage, in part because he thought civil unions would be enough and because of what he describes as powerful traditions around marriage for many around the world. Let's listen to Barack Obama from 2012 evolving his evolution on gay marriage.
But I have to tell you that over the course of several years, as I talk to friends and family and neighbors, when I think about members of my own staff who are in incredibly committed monogamous relationships, same-sex relationships, who are raising kids together, when I think about those soldiers or airmen or Marines or sailors who are out there fighting on my behalf and yet feel constrained, even now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is gone, because they're not able to commit themselves in a marriage. At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
Barack Obama in 2012. Sharon Malero, talk a little bit about how many people, I mean, the evolution that so many Americans have gone through, similar to Barack Obama's, that was his public statement of it, of course. But where are we now? Is marriage equality, do you think, safe for all time in this country?
I wish I could say yes, but right now I'm not really sure. we have constitutional declarations that say this, but then we have certain legislatures, and I think it's talked about a little bit at the Iowa legislature. It hasn't happened this year, but they want to have constitutional amendments to turn around, because the only way to turn around a Supreme Court decision is by constitutional amendment. So I think we're back in the fray again, but I'm hoping that there's been enough evolution that we can overcome that. I'll never forget, kind of toward the end of, after the decision came out and as we were still talking about it, I overheard Senator Pat Murphy tell a story about a wedding that he'd gone to in his district at the time, Representative Murphy, and it was at a farm. One of the brides was a farm girl, and he said he looked around and there were a couple farmers standing off to the side, and they had their overalls on and their seed caps on and seed corn caps on. He said, I went over to him and said, well, I'm kind of surprised you're here. And they looked at him and they said, why would you say that? And he said, well, you know, I kind of figured you're more conservatives. I know you're Republican. They said, but Mary's been our next-door neighbor ever since she was born, and we watched her grow up. We babysat for her. She babysat for our kids. She's like one of our own. Why wouldn't we be here on this special day for her? Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of story that kind of gets me through kind of where we're at right now, where I'm not sure where it's going, but I think that we have still those people who will stand up and say, you know what, why are we talking about this? It doesn't matter anymore.
Okay, I want to get Camilla's view on that question, but first of all, let's go to a caller, Ed in Mount Pleasant. I'll have to ask you to make it quick, please, Ed, but welcome to the program.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I just wonder if the panel thinks that the change in the selection of Supreme Court justices is still part of the retribution against the court for making this decision.
Right. That's more recent political news from the state. Camilla Taylor, do you have a view on that? I don't know if you're tuned in to Iowa politics today.
Well, I do think that views have changed sufficiently about the Varnum decision that I think people are taking a great degree of pride that Iowa led the way even for the Supreme Court. But it is worrying to see politicization of courts that need to be able to make decisions for themselves based on what the law is without concern for whether they're going to feel retribution for doing the right thing. And that's a worry, not just in Iowa, but with courts around the country.
Right. I want to read an email from Brenda. Brenda in Cedar Falls wrote an email for this program. Hello. The question that continues to be asked, writes Brenda, why does it have to be marriage? As if some other legal remedy would be good enough. For instance, civil unions. My response is simple, writes Brenda. I want to marry my wife because I was raised in the same culture as everybody else. I was taught since childhood to want and desire someone to share my life with, to be married, and to have kids. We all were taught that lesson at church through our popular culture, by examples of our parents and relatives. When I asked my then partner to marry me in 1999, I knew we couldn't really be married, but that was the best and strongest language I had to impress upon her, how I wanted to spend my life with her, and we were thrilled that we could legally be married in May of 2009 at a party we had already planned to celebrate our 10-year anniversary. 20 years, 10 as a married couple with an 8-year-old son and still going strong. Thanks for doing this show. Brenda, thank you for the email to contribute to it as well. Sharon, there's one thing we haven't mentioned here, and I think that email touches on it a little bit. How do you deal with the religious arguments? We heard from Michael there about an anti-same-sex marriage activist that he encountered in April of 2009. How do you deal with religious arguments against same-sex marriage? Sharon, are you still there?
My basic argument back is that I'm religious too. I'm a Christian. I believe that the same God that you pray to is the same God that I pray to, and I believe that I've been accepted by God. And so your description is different than mine, but I don't think that religion is against same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm. Camilla Taylor, I wanted to circle back to you and ask you the question I asked Sharon just a moment ago. How safe is marriage equality, you believe, in this country?
Well, we're still fighting. We're still fighting for marital rights, for surviving spouses so that they can get their Social Security benefits, survivor benefits. We're still fighting in courts that families be recognized as families in every state. So unfortunately, there's still some powerful forces that are trying to refuse to accept rulings of courts around the country that require that same-sex couples get the freedom to marry. That said, there have been so many brave people who have come out, especially young people. I find it very hard to believe that we will ever go fully backwards. So we still have a fight ahead of us, both in the court and in the court of public opinion. But we have a lot to be optimistic about as we look forward into the future.
Okay, and quickly, Sharon Malero, founder of One Iowa, very quickly, what future legal challenges do you see for the LGBTQ community going forward, springing from the Varnum decision, perhaps?
Well, I think some of what Camilla brought up just a minute ago, that state courts are making decisions and then kind of getting that to carry over into some federal issues as well. But I think our next bigger trend is trying to fight for the additional inclusion of those of our transgender brothers and sisters.
Okay, very good. I want to thank you very much. Sharon Malero, founder of One Iowa, member of the Davis Brown Law Firm now, and Camilla Taylor of Lambda Legal, counsel for the Varnum decision. We also heard Michael Moraine. Thank you for stepping into our studio, Michael. It was short, but what a great story you had there.
Thank you. Take care.
You too.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop and Emily Woodbury. Also help today from Camus Leeson. And John Pemble helped us out in Des Moines as well. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. If you'd like to chip in any comments or questions, perhaps you would like to suggest a future program, you can contact us anytime, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Tomorrow on the program, of course, Politics Wednesday. Our political analysts, Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa, will be along, as well as Jim McCormick of Iowa State University. As usual, a full agenda to talk about the politics of the last few days. We hope you'll join us. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.